Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and good evening to the listeners. Tonight we are doing constitution matters again, and as I say always, it's different from the legal hour. The legal hour only starts at 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock, but tonight between 6 o'clock and 7 o'clock, we have the constitution matters, which is a different program, and it's got a constitutional slant. Your host is Ihsan Higgins, it's myself. And we now tonight, you know, we have a very different matter since last week. I mean, this is the second episode of Constitutional Matters, and a series that will, and I mean, as we said last week, it's a series that will air every Monday evening at 6 p.m. throughout the month of September. And it is presented in collaboration with the Voice of the Cape, Students for Law and Social Justice, the Council for the Advancement of the South African Constitution, and Canon Collins. Those are the people that brought this particular program to the listeners. And during this series, we'll be discussing pressing matters in the Constitution, matters that mainly affect you and I. In this series, we hope to educate and inspire you and ignite this thirst for the Constitution. And as we say, that over the next few weeks, we said we're going to focus on education, property, and violence against women and children. And of course, the right of freedom of religion and freedom of expression. So last week, we dealt with this. We started with the right to protest. We somehow dealt with the Marikana massacre. And tonight, we will deal with the whole issue of education. More particularly, we're going to focus on the Fees Must Fall protests, and we're going to hopefully have a very robust discussion again tonight, you know, like we had last week, asking the specialists, the panel before me, you know, very difficult questions, and I'm sure, you know, they can answer all those difficult questions. Now, the listeners are invited to participate. You know, they on the SMS line, they can contact us on 47913, and on WhatsApp on 072-238-0712. And the studio on air, well, we're not going to field live calls because we just don't have enough time for that. So send your messages and I will ask those questions to the panel. And so I'm not going to give the whole introduction, you know, that the producers have asked me to give, because it's a long thing, but I will cover it as we go along. And now, tonight in studio with me this evening is Dr. Conrad Potberg from the University of Cape Town. Good evening, Dr. Potberg. Conrad. Can I call you Conrad?
Conrad would be fine.
Okay. Good evening.
This is a correction, the University of the Western Cape.
What did I say?
University of Cape Town.
Ah, okay. Okay, sorry. My mistake. So it's University of the Western Cape. Thank you for that, Conrad. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I've been a teacher for quite a number of years and moved into higher education in 2011, where I worked in the Faculty of Education at CPUT before joining UWC last year in the law faculty. As the teaching and learning specialist.
So what did you do at CPUT?
I lectured in education itself, education management.
In the education department?
Yes, in the education department. And
so why did you leave CPUT?
No, I think probably there's a greater challenge at UWC.
Yeah, look, I've been at both institutions. I did my law degree at Western Cape, and I was sitting on council of CPUT up till recently. So I'm very familiar with the two institutions. That's why I'm asking you the question.
Yeah. Now, I'll just divert from that specific part.
Okay.
The move away from CPUT.
Okay, now, great. So I know at least now we've got somebody is going to answer the difficult questions. Then the other person that we have in studio is one we invited back from last week because he knew such a lot. So we figured, you know, bringing him back is giving us a very good perspective on how, you know, these things happen in the protests, and of course now with the education issue that we linked for that. So I have with me Mr. Ghalib Khalan. Assalamu alaikum, Ghalib.
Wa alaikum salam.
And Ghalib is from the Right to Know campaign. Okay, so thank you for agreeing again to join us. I know it's in the traffic, you need to get here, and it's an awkward time, but yeah, you're here now. So thanks for that. So We are discussing in this episode the constitution matters in respect of education, and more particularly in terms of section 29 of the constitution. Okay, so now, and for those listeners, you know, need to sit a little bit closer, especially those that have children at university or at any tertiary institution, you know, to sit a little bit closer, because we're going to deal with this issue of the right to free tertiary education, emphasis on free. So sometimes free is not always free, and we need to unpack that situation. Okay, it's an ongoing debate in this country, and we want you out there, the listeners, to join us in this conversation. Now some of you are in the car and it's very difficult to SMS or WhatsApp, so maybe if you leave a voice note, then my producers on that side can pick up your voice note and they can ask me the question and we can take it from there. But under no circumstances type whilst you are driving. Okay, that's illegal. It's not even constitutional. Okay, so let's take it from there. Let me kick off with Ghalib. Ghalib, section 29 of the constitution, what does it entail?
So section 29 of the constitution says that everyone has the right to basic education, which includes adult basic education, and then further education. Mm-hmm. And then further education as far as the government is able to provide it. So there's the right to free basic education in the constitution, that's the right. But then the question around higher education or tertiary education is then one that is within the means of government to provide. So when we saw in 2015 the demand for free higher education, that wasn't necessarily a right enshrined in the constitution. Hence we saw over 3 years great contestation coming from student from the student side in order to try and establish a right. And there is a question that whether the announcement on the 16th of December in 2017, just before he left office, by former President Jacob Zuma, that government would henceforth provide free higher education to students, whether that now establishes this right for higher education students to demand from government. And particularly, I think, in the context that we see now in 2018, where NSFAS is in, shall we say, a bit of a mess, mm-hmm. Bursaries and whatnot haven't been paid out yet to students.
Alif, I just wanted to say, you know, once again, you know, the views expressed in this program is not the views of the Voice of the Cape, it's management or staff. Because whoever's now with NSFAS is now not going to appreciate we saying that they're in a mess. I think there's a perceived mess by the students, you know, so maybe they're busy sorting out the house, but I want to hear from Conrad, what is your view on that? Because, well, you know, this whole thing of when Jacob Zuma, former president, said, you know, fees is free now. And of course, this fell into the lap of NSFAS, am I correct?
Not necessarily.
Okay, but now I want you to explain it, because yeah. I think a lot of people understand it that way. Because I had lots of calls on air at the time saying, you know, is NSFAS now going to pay my child's fees? You know, so. And then a lot of people were disappointed that the fees were not paid. So now we have this problem of saying, on the one hand, that the president said that fees is free. On the other hand, NSFAS is the agency that facilitate these free fees. So I want you to explain that to us.
Well, my understanding is that the NSFAS would be just the sort of the, how can I say, the medium.
The agency. Let's
the
call
agency
it, okay.
Mm. To provide the funds.
Yes.
I still believe that most of the responsibility still fell on institutions themselves to cover fees.
But where would the money come from?
Now, and this is the point then that comes, the public sector would then have to put the bill for the fee-free education.
Okay, so the public sector, so I take it that is an amount that is budgeted for by Parliament and of course moved to the Department of Education, and the Department of Education or Higher Education will then of course disburse these monies to the institutions of higher learning like the universities and the technicons. Yes.
But then they also had this model of who is free, and then the middle group or the lost gap. Okay. Students that would have free or not, they would have no increase on their fees.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I'm not sure of the amount, but income above 650,000 would pay
okay.
the normal
We're
fee.
We're going to talk a little bit about more about that because I want to get to the point of on what basis we're talking about free fees and does the Constitution guarantee this, right? And we also got Rudy Kipper on the line. Good evening, Rudy.
Good evening, everybody listening. There's a great time. Good evening, Sam.
I can't hear you. You need to speak a little bit more clear.
Okay, good evening to everyone in the Voice of the Cape, and good evening, Sam.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks for that, Rudy. Rudy, after the break, I'm going to ask you, seeing that you were an active member of the students at that time and you were arrested during the Fees Must Fall protest, I'm going to ask you your perspective on what you understand by the right to education. Okay, so think about that. After the break, we come back. I'm going to start with you. I'm going to go back to the other panelists. Back with Constitution Matters. Your host is Ihsan Higgins. With me in studio is Khalib Galant, and we got somebody on the line, and his name is Mr. Kibido, if I can remember correctly.
Yes,
and we got Dr. Conrad Potberg here. So is it a high-profile education minister here in the studio? So if I can just get to Mr. Kibido, what is your first name?
Rudy.
Rudy is the first one.
Rudy. Rudy, what university are you at?
I'm at the University of the Western Cape. I completed my LLB law degree at the university this year.
Which university?
At UWC.
Oh, you at UWC. So you finished with your law degree?
I'm completing my law degree last year, sir.
Okay, now tell us, you were arrested, okay, during the Fees Must Fall protest. What happened to you?
Let me start this by saying this is the first time speaking out since we were declared not guilty about 2 weeks back. I think lots of time people have different perspectives of what really transpired.
Rudy, we're getting a lot of difficulty hearing you. Can you put either your mouth closer to the receiver or something? But I mean, we can't hear you properly. It's like a mumble. So maybe you might just speak a little bit slower and into the receiver.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you a lot better now, yes.
Okay, no, this is better. Let me just start by saying it's the first time since coming out, since we were declared not guilty about 2 to 3 weeks ago. After
did your case run that long?
Excuse me?
How long did the case run?
The case was on trial for like 3 years.
Did you have the right lawyers? Because it doesn't sound like you had the right lawyers that allowed this case to go on this long.
And it's a state matter, so therefore it was treated with high sensitivity, and therefore it had to be given the respect that it actually deserved.
Anyway, I would just say that 3 years is a very long time. Did it cost you a lot of money?
No, it didn't cost us a lot of money. Luckily, there was lawyers that was more than willing to help our case because that believed our story and believed in our story.
Okay, now then you had the right lawyers because if they believed in your case and they didn't charge you, then I believe they did the right thing. It wasn't just a question of dragging the matter out so that they can be free. So well done to the attorneys. So they got you off basically 2 weeks ago only.
not, let's not say 2 weeks, I'd call it a month.
Okay. And now tell me, what motivated you at the time to join the protest?
I think lots of people lose a perspective of what really, like, before I said, really transpired back then. So people are actually clouded by judgment that is portrayed in the media most of the time. So I'd say on the day, people forget that there was innocent students around the protest as well. And telling my story, I really wanted to actually achieve this by another means, but I will go into a little bit of detail about it.
No, I don't have time for much detail. We're going to break for Maghrib very soon. So okay. I just need to tell me, on what basis did you feel that you needed to participate in the Fees Must Fall protest?
I think I did not have a basis there was no basis, but after the whole episode happened, I put my interest out there to learn from those that were genuinely fighting for the cause, and that's what I've learned from them, that the movement is actually something genuine above the hooliganism that people pretend it to be on the outside.
Okay, and tell me, did you believe that fees should be free at that point?
At that point in my I was of opinion that it should be free, but I feel that the manner in which our generation took to try and achieve it was kind of not
Let's not look at the means at this point in time. I mean, things happen, you know, people get out of hand, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the first thing is you had a certain idea when you woke up that morning and you went to protest. Your motivation was that fees must fall. In your mind, did it mean that fees must now be free?
That means that, fees should be free.
Okay. Now, that's good, because I want to get to that point. I want to now ask the panel here in the studio, you know, what does it mean for the Constitution speaks about the right to education. But now, does that right mean that there's no obligations attached to that right? Who do I start with? Conrad, let me start with you.
Okay. Firstly, I have to say that the Constitution speaks to the right to basic education, and as Khalid earlier mentioned, that the right to higher education or further education, the Constitution speaks about making it accessible and not necessarily free, and there should be measures in place. The question becomes, what is free? Is there such a thing as free education or free higher education?
Mm-hmm.
Because someone has to pay.
Of course.
And then it becomes...
That just reminds me now. Somebody just sent a message here. It says, "Salam, Mr. Higgins. The Fees Must Fall campaign has resulted into the increase of VAT to cover the free higher education, putting more strain on the poor SA taxpayer and resulted in the increase of the cost of living and bringing the country into disrepute." That's exactly what you're saying right now.
So it becomes a state-funded model more. I think the demand is more for a state-funded model for higher education. But then I always question the issue about basic education or further education, the FET phase, that there's a need for free education there as well. Because in all our teams to include people, while our schools are under-resourced, we'll still be excluding a certain group of people, especially those that have access to better resource schools.
Mm-hmm.
So then it becomes, we have students that are underprepared when they enter university.
Okay. So I understand that. So in a word, you'll say that the Constitution guarantees education, but it doesn't guarantee free education.
Yes.
And therefore there's certain mechanisms that need to be put in place. Now, Ghalib, we've heard government's response, but in fact there was a few parties that responded to this. The university senate, or rather the councils, who needed to respond to this Fees Must Fall protest that our other guest, Rudy, that's been involved in. They needed to respond to this. There was a lot of pressure put on by Parliament, because of course Parliament was essentially stormed on a certain day, and government responded in a certain way. Do you think it was the responsible response at the time, or was it more a necessary response, you know, to that particular situation?
So I mean, I think we can probably spend hours and hours thinking through what went through former President Zuma's mind in December when he made the announcement of free education, and to some extent he's left that legacy with the new government to implement. And so what government has done is to already increase by something like 7 billion rand funding to universities and TVET colleges in this year. And so there's the rather ambitious plan to increase funding to the sector from 9 billion rand this year to 35 billion rand in 2020-2021. So that's the plan. Already what that says is that we're not dealing with a free education system. We're still dealing with a fee-based education system. So if you don't fall within the bracket of 350,000 rand or below, then you will be required still to pay fees.
Full fees anyway, Ghalib, we're going to get into what exactly people must pay in respect of this right to education. And that we're going to do after the break. And we're going to first now break for Maghrib, according to my technician. So after Salah, we'll come back and we will talk about, you know, what's the obligation. Okay, we understand the right. What's the obligation? And we're going to hear from Rudy also, you know, what his view is pertaining to a potential model, you know, of going forward. So shukran for that. We're going to come off the back of this break. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's finished with prayers now, with Maghrib Salah. So now we're going to continue with some of our questions. And a lot of questions coming in. And we just had a question from Shante. Salam Ihsan. It's been noted on your show this evening that fee-free education is not guaranteed by our constitution, but is it something that could be realized in terms of the provision which exists today, which is section 29. That we can answer, you know, in the other discussion. Rudy, are you still with us? Okay, we're going to get him on a bit later. Conrad, I just want to check with you, you know, obviously education through this provision in the Constitution. A lot of people read this provision to mean, you know, if people, like when people read in the Constitution about housing, your right to housing, people think it's free housing. People read about education, people think it's free education. Can our country afford this?
I don't think so. Not at the current state of affairs, you know. And this makes me think about the current debate and with Section 25 of the Constitution and the amendment to Section 25. And if we want to protest about free education or the right to education, or the right to free education, then there should be the demand for the amendment to Section 29 of the Constitution. Then,
of course, to say free.
To say free, yes. Because and then demand higher education to be free as well.
Okay. Now, Ghalib, why did it cost our country? I know that you are in possession of some of the stats.
So, I mean, the fees must fall protests over the 3 years were interesting because, one, it largely affected universities. even though the biggest recipients, I guess, even under this new fee arrangement, will be the TVET colleges. And so most poor people actually go to TVET colleges. And for 90% of TVET college students, education will come under this free education umbrella. Only maybe 40% of university students will eventually fall under this. However, there's a cost to that. So education, everything that government provides comes at a cost. And so when we were talking about free education at the end of last year, we were talking of an order of 57 billion rand needed to be found in order to fund that. But there were also costs involved even in the protest. And so there's a question for me around the 800 million rands worth of damage done to infrastructure and university properties, for example, across the country. That also has to
How
be
much? What did you
800
say?
Million rands, so close to a billion rands worth of damage.
To the actual university and higher education infrastructure, like buildings, etc.
Yeah, so if you remember the big fire at UJ, we had several...
there was a fire in Wellington in one of CPUT.
One of the CPUT campuses, yeah. The Great Hall, etc., etc. So... 800 million rand, close to a billion rands worth of damage done through those protests. Now, that also needs to be factored into in terms of the cost of education.
Was there no insurance on these things?
Well,
I don't know. Well, let's not talk about that now. But okay, it's 800 million worth of damage as a result of fees must fall. And then, of course, the money that the government must find to finance this promise by the former president. That's, of course, how much was that?
So that's about in the order of about between 30 and 50 billion rand.
Sure.
Billion.
Billion.
Zeros.
Yeah.
So everything, and that's why the constitutional provision says in relation to higher education that it is achievable but progressively realizable. So within the constraints of the resources that are available to government. Now, add to that we are on the verge of being declared junk status in terms of our economy. So where the money will come from, not maybe this year, but next year and the year after that, these are recurring costs. There's a question around how realizable progressively will this be. So the promise made at the end of last year in December by former President Zuma, when in fact he was standing on the precipice of being booted out anyway, was really a poison chalice almost handed to this country. Whether the demand for free education is a legitimate one or not, that's not the question. I think the issue is whether we will be able to realize that. And if we're not able, is it something that we ought to be promising even?
Okay, so that brings me to the question, Conrad, maybe you can answer it. In light of what Ghalib said now, it seems that, you know, this is an unaffordable exercise for this country. So does that now mean that perceived right is actually a privilege when it comes to higher education?
That's a very tricky question, that.
that's why you should think you have to answer those questions. Because it just sounds like if the country can't afford these particular monies that was now flouted, like between 30 billion and 50 billion, our country is about to go into a recession, or whether we are in the recession already, is it affordable? Can we still then say it's going to be free, and if you can't afford it, it becomes a privilege?
Yeah. I think it's important, as the same point I raised earlier, the more we try to include everybody, the more we exclude certain individuals as well. So I would agree with the notion that it would be to some extent a privilege, because if we're looking at our weaker or poorer socioeconomic communities, and they're going to be serviced through this, right, then it becomes a privilege for them. So whatever I achieved previously and to sustain my family and to provide them a better life becomes now that you're not entitled to that privilege now,
mm-hmm.
because you're not the poorest of the poor.
Okay, now coming to the poorest of the poor issue, Ghalib, I'm looking for a solution now because we don't have a lot of time left. I'm sorry that we've been, this is the topic we can speak about for 2 hours. But what I want to ask now is, isn't a good solution, I'm putting it to you, that when somebody qualifies, they may have received the education for free, but when he or she starts earning money, shouldn't there be a form of a special tax that the person that benefited from free education can now, when they start working, that the percentage of their money must now go back into the tertiary education? Is that not a possibility?
So if you remember, in the run-up, sort of throughout last year, there were public consultations on what this fee-free education model should look like, etc. And there were a number of submissions. Some submissions spoke of a graduate tax along the lines of what you were suggesting now. Others talked about paying it forward. So there were a number of really interesting suggestions that came out. There were also, though, certain sectors that were quite dogged in pursuing free education for everyone. So there were a number of suggestions that actually those who could afford to pay ought to pay. But there were also the sort of very strong positions from many fallist quarters that no, the principle was free education, and that meant free for everybody.
So if somebody finishes up with his law degree and he works for a fancy law firm and he buys himself a BMW or a Mercedes or whatever the fancy car he has, and he had the benefit of free education, somehow that doesn't sit right with me. Conrad, what do you think?
I agree with that. And I think that there needs to be some form of repayment. And I think initially NSFAS was the one that would, it wasn't a bursary. NSFAS served the purpose of a loan scheme. And you had to pay back,
yes,
in order to fund the next generation. So
I remember 10 years after I finished my law degree, I received a letter from NSFAS saying I owe them 8,000 rand. And I thought, how did I owe them 8,000 rand? At the time when I finished, I think it was about 2,000 rand. And then the interest just carried on and on and on, and 10 years later it got to 10,000. And then I tried to explain to them from a legal position, you know, that you can't, the in duplum rule applies, it can never be more than 4,000. Alternatively, they should have written it off after a certain time. And then I started researching it, and then I realized that NSFAS can claim monies back from you 15 years in terms of the Prescription Act. And secondly, that in duplum rule didn't apply to them. It may apply now, but the reality is, some ways along the line you need to pay it back, and of course I had to pay it back. So I don't see why this is it the debate finished? Can these proposals not still be tabled somewhere at some portfolio committee or something? Is it finished now, or and that what Ghalib said now is going to be our reality to make this right, something real, or can we still have this debate?
I think it's also important that this cannot end now. Even if we look at the section of the Constitution, it needs to be a progressive process, and it can't be concluded within a year, 2 years. And I think clearly there needs to be thought about how we're going to collect those monies again. And the point I made earlier also off air was, in our capitalist society, we can't speak about free unless we move to a socialist economy where we say, okay, everything is now free and somebody needs to get paid, somebody needs to pay for things. So there needs to be looked at, and not everybody is being taxed. Yeah, and often it's the poorest that suffer the most from the taxes that are implemented.
Okay, there's a nice message on here that says, seems everything in South Africa is a headache at the moment. People can't get everything free of charge. They want it free, but the quality isn't good. The system can't sustain itself. Now, Ghalib, on that note, I want you to conclude, because we're now eating now past 7. I want you to maybe tell us, as a conflict resolution specialist, where do we take this fight now? You know, as civil society, do we now just accept, you know, what was done by a previous government, you could say, the Zuma dispensation? How do we engage the Ramaphosa dispensation to actually get us back on track, to make sure that this right is implemented from a constitutional point of view, but also at the same time making sure that it does not overburden the currently overburdened taxpayer any further?
Not a simple question.
I know it's a simple question, but try to just direct us in the right direction. Who do we lobby at this point in time as civil society?
I suspect there are probably some fundamental questions, though. So much of the 3 years of Fees Must Fall was focused on universities. And so there is a big question around whether that really is the locus or the space that people coming into access higher education ought to be going into, right? And given the needs of the country. So if you look at the cost of university education versus the cost, for example, to go to a TVET, there's a marked difference. And so already in relation to the numbers, you can get fewer students through with the same amount of money as you would through TVET colleges. So I think there's a question around whether the focus of our attention has been the correct one. So that's the first thing. The second thing is government's plan is to phase this in. And it started with first year students in 2018, so and going forward. So if you were second year in 2018, you would not benefit from this. Yeah. So already there's this phased in approach. Do we claim this right? So first of all, there is a big question, is it a right? Because the constitution hasn't been amended. The constitution still talks about realizable within the means, right? Which also seems to suggest that if we don't have the means, if we continue to sit with a 50 billion rand hole in the fiscus, that this might be one of the things that gets cut. There are lots of questions, because do you prefer 83,000 university students, which is what the money will pay for now, versus, say, 10 million grant beneficiaries? These are the hard questions when it comes down to numbers, right? Where do you spend your money? What is the priority? And in the absence of, I think, a national debate on what is our education for, and the more, if we look at the current economic climate, what are we training people up for? How are we reshaping this economy to better meet modern needs? Just throwing money at the situation, I don't think is going to solve.
Because, I mean, don't we have enough, Conrad, last point, don't we have enough BA graduates and social science graduates that's possibly unemployed at the moment?
Yes, I would say so. You know, the concern is always that we look at all these graduates and then whether they are employable. And then you ask the question, was the protest itself, was it worth it?
Good and question. So on the question of was it worth it, Ghalib, presidential pardons was also part of that was it worth it thing. People are ending up with criminal records, and they what is the story with presidential pardons?
So the president has
which president now?
Well, CR-17, I guess.
Okay, CR-17.
So President Ramaphosa has, under the Constitution, the right, him personally, to pardon people. And so that generally talks about someone who already is sitting with a criminal conviction. And he, only the president can do so. He can't delegate that to a subordinate. It must be rational. There are some limitations, but actually it's an unfettered discretion.
Okay.
So there is a question, though, that it must be rational. It can't be outside of the constitutional framework, and it must be exercised.
So is this being done at the moment? Has it been done, will it still be done at some point?
Well, you remember that President Mandela, for example, pardoned people in the the Hugo case. Thabo Mbeki pardoned two people as well, but the circumstances were that
But I want to get you closer to home now. The current people that are sitting now with criminal records as a result of this, will they be pardoned? Has it been promised to them? Has Cyril Ramaphosa promised this?
No.
Is going to be implemented, or must it still be lobbied?
The message from government has been, we're not going to consider that. In fact, there was some fancy footwork. The Justice Minister has said they will assist with appeals, with an appeal process through the National Prosecuting Authority. Against the sentences. Now that's not a pardon. A pardon would be that the squashing of the criminal record, expunging of the criminal record, or the reduction of the remittance of the fines, etc. That's not currently on the table, even though it's a demand.
Okay. Well, that's something that I would like to speak about, you know, at a later point again. Unfortunately, you know, we have run out of time. The legal hour people has already arrived. So it brings me to the end of the show, and we would like to thank our guests, Harley, Rudy and Conrad, for joining us this evening. And definitely an interesting discussion, and I hope the people at home, they've listened and learned something new tonight, and maybe have more questions in the air that they can send into Voice of the Cape Radio. So thank you for listening and participating in the discussion on the right to education. The questions are still coming through. So next week, inshallah, we're going to talk about land expropriation again from a constitutional point of view. I'm not sure yet who my producers are actually bringing on as guests. I'm assuming, you know, it's going to be people that are as knowledgeable as my current guests. So same time next week, same place, and another episode of Constitution Matters in collaboration with Voice of the Cape Radio, Students for Law and Social Justice, the Council for the Advancement of the South African Constitution, and Canon Collins. So from my side, assalamu alaikum and good evening.
And happy new year.